Good afternoon and welcome to Who's in the Kitchen. I'm Philothea Beeson and you're listening to WDRT 91.9 Community Radio coming from the Driftless area of southwestern Wisconsin. Viroqua is where our studios are. And also we're on the internet at WDRT.org where you can go and listen to archives of previous shows. This show will probably show up in about Monday or Tuesday of next week. And you can also listen to my farming show with Joseph Childs on the last Saturday of the month. All of our shows are at noon. We just love covering the subject of food and food growing, food preparation, enjoyment, entertainment, guests, parties. My guests today are Joseph Myers and Patty Fulton, and I've had them on my show before, mainly Joseph, but you might remember a show that I've done with Joseph about entertaining, but he's been on several times. He has just so many wonderful suggestions about what to do with food, with and sharing it with other people. So, you know, I'm just going to have a nice conversation with Joseph and Patty. Thanks for coming, you guys.
Oh, thank you. Thank you again for having me.
Thank you so much, Philip.
We always love getting together. And, I mean, I just think of them as really the hospitality couple. And they have a bed and breakfast down near Seneca. Kind of get a peek at, do you actually see the Mississippi River or just the valleys that...
We sure can.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. So they're just up on one of those pinnacles, and you can look down through the woods and down to the Mississippi. But their bed and breakfast is called Latarnia, and we have talked about their entertainment business there, and they have parties, and they give classes, and they've also been traveling a lot. So I want to hear what they've done... In the last few months, they found a good way to get out of Wisconsin for a few of the winter months. But now our show will be aiming toward spring and summer, too. So welcome to the show. Let me just start maybe with your travels. Where did you go in the last couple of months?
We were approached by dear friends. She's of Panamanian descent, and she said... We have lived together for 10 years. We're looking at eloping in Panama. Will you get ordained and then fly down and marry us?
So, it's so true. So true.
So we did. Getting ordained is not that tough. You go online and click a couple of buttons and submit your credit card. And then I had the documentation to do that. But we went... Off this lovely little island called Bocas del Toro. And standing at the end of a dock with the Panamanian jungle behind us and the Caribbean in front of us, we married this lovely couple because she has family there. They took us around to local restaurants and local places. And
food
was fabulous. Patty pointed out, you take water taxis everywhere. Because it's easier and cheaper than going overland.
So, what does a water taxi look like?
It's a boat.
Is it like a little inflatable raft?
No, it's a full size
boat.
It's like one of the boats you'd see, like a glass bottom boat.
Mm-hmm.
And you get in there and you sit, and they take you wherever you wanted to go.
And it'll hold like 18 people.
Okay.
It did.
So,
yeah.
So we're waiting for the water taxi to come, and some man comes up in a dugout canoe, and on the floor of the canoe in front of him, he had this bag of spiny lobsters, and somebody negotiated with him about the price of the lobster, and he said $20 for the whole bag.
And I think there were 10 or 12 lobsters.
Yeah.
Like, what size are they?
We're on the radio, so we can't
remember. Sorry, guys. Maybe a pound or two. They were a nice size.
Mm-hmm.
So we went back to the little lodge we were staying at, and he showed me how to clean them. And while he's making this incredible Caribbean rice, while that's cooking and on the top of the rice, he had me take four habanero peppers, which are, to me, brutally hot, and pierce them with the tip of a knife. And he said, float these on the top. Do not stir them into the rice. And he said, this will perfume the rice rather than season it with heat. So while that rice is cooking, we're cleaning the lobsters, and it's you clean them upside down so the gooey part drips out, and then he simmers all of the... It was incredible.
Are the lobsters alive when you're gutting them or cleaning them?
The first pierce of the knife, they are no longer alive.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. And what color are they? Are they kind of greenish?
They're kind of crayfishy. They're not like... North American lobsters with claws. They're not cold water lobsters. They don't even have claws. So think of a ginormous prawn. And that was the flavor of them.
Or like antennas.
They have big old feelers and everything. But it was an awful lot of fun. We went into a local grocery store and shopped around for things we recognized and stumbled across things we didn't recognize. And for breakfast, I wanted to make something with chorizo. And one of the Panamanian ladies said, well, sure, come right over here. And in a refrigerated case, it looked like little chubby hot dogs, much, much shorter, but much bigger around. And I thought, I don't know, we'll see. We'll try it. So the next morning, I split them all out of their case, and they had the texture of hot dogs. It was not a fall-apart Mexican ground seasoned pork, and I started to fry them up, and it was difficult for they didn't render any fat. There was hardly any fat in them at all, but they browned beautifully. So it was a lot of fun to knock around in a Panamanian grocery store and then go around to the different local restaurants where it's not touristic. We were the only white folks around. And
well, I was going to ask you, I always get the idea that Panama has a lot of English-speaking people and so forth. Is it British? Is it American? Is it Central American?
It's Central American. At one point, it was part of Colombia.
Okay.
There are a lot of expats there. There are a lot of American influence in starting in the culture, but you're not seeing Burger King or Walmart or any of that. Or at least where we were.
Right.
Panama City itself is spectacularly gorgeous. The architecture looks like New Philadelphia. It just tall skyscrapers and all of that. But we were out in the jungle when Patty was working with the ladies to get ready for the actual wedding ceremony. The florist showed up and she had a ball of twine and a very small machete, and she went into the jungle and cut ginger flowers and banana leaves and palm fronds.
I think there was bird of paradise, too.
And just kind of assembled there. She said, we don't go to a florist shop, we go into the jungle.
No, that's where we order our flowers from.
Exactly. It was absolutely beautiful.
Oh,
all the bouquets were basically for the girls. They matched the dresses. And I was so honored that I even got a bouquet.
Yeah, that was nice.
Aww,
it was beautiful.
Nice. Well, I'm back to the food, and I'm just interested. I mean, what are the kind of things that really appear in the Panamanian cooking that, you know, just we don't think of it here?
Much like most of Central American cooking, it's unusual to find a chunk of flesh in the center of the plate surrounded by vegetables. The protein component of the entree flavors everything else. So there was a lot of pork, but not a pork chop. It was all cut into smaller pieces, browned all over, and that flavored all of the vegetables and the rice. About the only thing we saw in the center of the plate, we had a lot of fish.
Yeah.
And it was, we never got a straight answer as to what kind of fish it was. So there was... one determination was this is a white fish or this is an oily fish. And they were all delicious.
Right. And then we had octopus, which I absolutely adore. Yep.
Now, how do they prepare the octopus? Are there several ways?
There are several ways. Okay. You have to continually blanch the entire whole octopus in and out of water to, I guess, cook it or firm it up. And then the tentacles are grilled whole and then sliced and used to flavor the rest of the dish. We saw a lot of patacones, which is the Plantain.
Yes, those were wonderful.
That was plantain peeled, fried halfway through, and then mashed down so it became more of a disc, and then again fried. So they of them were...
refried.
Exactly. Some of them were super crispy, and some of them were nice and creamy on the inside. And each little place did patacones different.
Right. I was in Costa Rica, and I was thinking that, you know, it's kind of the same thing. A lot of plantains, just of every kind of form. And plantain chips, like potato chips in the bag. And but I found the cooking in Costa Rica rather bland and not quite really varied. I don't know if you found that in Panama. Was it really flavorful?
Because we cooked with locals. It wasn't built for the American palate. The chicken dish that he did, the man's name was Sugar.
Right.
Sugar made this lovely chicken creation, and it was perfumed with passion fruit. So he split open a passion fruit and kept ladling the poaching liquid from the chicken over the passion fruit that was sitting in a colander. So he's getting all the syrup and all of the good stuff and pulling out all the seeds. And I thought, that's not going to go very far with this big pot of chicken, because we were cooking for 12. And he said, this passion fruit puree will perfume. It's not going to season it. It's going to perfume it. And
just the way the
habaneros perfume the rice. So it was a different way of treating simple ingredients, which we loved.
Mm-hmm. And the smell, along with the taste, intensified what you were eating. So it tasted so good and so fresh. It was wonderful.
Yeah, it was
fresh. I'm Indeed. Sure that's one thing you were getting.
Yep.
What was the climate like?
Balmy. Mm-hmm. When it was the day in January, when it was 14 below here, we were at the end of the dock, and it was 89 degrees. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ha, ha, ha.
Life was
exactly.
And then we came back for a week or so, and then we went to Argentina and had the opportunity to spend 2 or 3 days in Buenos Aires before we went down into Patagonia to do some trout fishing. And when we came back from trout fishing, we had another couple of days, and Patty suggested that we invest in a food tour. So, okay, we'll do a food tour. And we met lovely docent, who was amazing, and she took us to local places for snacks, and we thought we were in a pizza restaurant, and painted on the door, and I'm going to spell it out, P-I-C-S-A. She said, no, this is pizza. And it was a sourdough crust pizza with 2 or 3 different kinds of cheeses and very little in the way of any kind of toppings. There may have been an olive here and there. And it was lovely. It was quite fun. And that's where we discovered they have a bar food that they eat called faina, F-A-I-N-A. And I thought, oh, this is so good. So it looks like it has the color of a crepe. It's made from chickpea flour and water. You make that batter, whisk it up, let it sit for a half an hour or so, and then skim off any of the foam that comes to the top. Add a little bit of olive oil to it. You have a cast iron pan preheating in the oven, much like a popover. Splash of olive oil goes in that pan. You pour the chickpea flour and water batter into the pan.
Like an inch? Half inch?
Maybe a half inch.
But it's more than a pancake or a crepe.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Correct. it doesn't puff up the way a popover or a Dutch baby would do, but it, surprisingly, 400 degree oven for half an hour. That's a long time, and when it comes out, the top and bottom have a crispiness to their...
A wonderful crust.
But the inside is all soft and creamy. We had one where it had a whisper of cayenne or paprika, and we had one with just a whisper of rosemary. So she said, we eat this one of two ways. When we're out having beers or Malbec, this is our popcorn. It's served in little wedges or in little sticks.
Oh.
She said, but the traditional way in the neighborhood in Buenos Aires is to cut the wedge of fina, the exact geometry as the slice of pizza, it's consumed en caballo on horseback. So the fina is on top of the slice of pizza and you eat them together. And I thought, boy, that seems to be a lot of carbohydrates all pushed together. Oh my goodness, it's so lovely.
It's light and
so
airy.
The chickpea flour you can get at the Viroqua Food Co-op, and it's chickpea flour and water. You can Google up a recipe on it. Skim off the foam, add a little olive oil, pour it into an olive oil lined pan, bake it 400 degrees for 35 minutes, let it cool until you can handle it, and it's just a fabulous, for those folks who have gluten issues, this is right up their alley, because it's chickpea flour.
Right. It would have more protein than just a white flour,
yep.
Right?
Yep, and no gluten.
Great.
But the rest of the food tour was historic. We went to a steakhouse. We went to a restaurant we went to two Michelin-starred restaurants.
Yeah, we did.
But you learn about the history and their producers and their purveyors and why they do what they do and why their competitors hate them, and you get all of the little drama and that, because the Argentinian people are a very, very proud culture. And from now on, any larger city that we would visit, even Madison, I'm looking to see who's doing food tours, because I wanna see what the locals eat, why it's appreciated. If there's an entrepreneur out there listening, someone could do a food tour of Vernon County and just have people standing in line to buy tickets.
Knock it out of the park.
Yep.
I also want to say, in one of the restaurants, we were serenaded. We had a group of us, and these four young men were singing throughout the whole dinner. And before we left, Joseph said, "Are you guys part of a choral group?" "No." And he's like, "You sang beautifully." And they asked him, would you like to hear another song?
This was their hobby. There was four guys sitting in a booth behind us singing harmony. English, German, Spanish, Italian.
I would love that.
My
it was
heart.
The coolest thing.
It just sang for you.
Yes.
Yeah, it was the coolest thing.
You would have loved it, Philip.
I would have loved it.
Okay.
Oh, that sounds great. So Argentina is kind of known for beef. I mean, is that
very
what,
much
one
so.
Of their...
Very so much so.
What do they do with it? How do they prepare it?
They're very proud of the fact that it's simply grilled. They season it with salt.
Outdoor grills, mainly.
Mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly.
And not yeah, seasoned with salt. Let the meat speak for itself.
Exactly. Exactly. The cuts are a little different. The New York mm-hmm. strip was cut just a whisper different, but absolutely lovely. Mm-hmm.
And probably grill over wood.
Mostly
woods,
wood. Yeah, mostly wood. And we didn't see anybody ordering any food, any steaks cooked beyond medium rare.
Yeah.
Nothing was well done.
Though. Yeah.
And on the food tour, the docent said, because you're Americans, we brought salad to the table. She said, we don't eat salad.
I was going to ask you, what are the sides?
Some vegetables, phenomenal potatoes.
Yeah.
But lots of olives. See, the German and Italian influence there, you see it in their olives and cheeses and wines and beers and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lovely woman in our group who has an interest in food. She said, being in Argentina, being in Buenos Aires for 4 days, she said, everything you do in your cuisine and the way that you eat flies in the face of all of my Facebook groups and mom groups that we fast after 9 o'clock at night. You guys don't even go out until 9 o'clock at night.
Okay, right. Like the Hispanic.
And,
yeah.
She said, you eat all this heavy food. And the she said to the docent who was, how old was Abby, 25 maybe?
She was barely 25.
Yeah. And she said, so what's a typical breakfast for you? Are you like fruit and yogurt and granola? And Abby said, do I look like I hate my body? No, I eat a lot of breakfast. I want my breakfast to look like lunch.
Okay.
She said, we pound food at breakfast. And this couple went out walking in Buenos Aires in the morning. They do their power walk, and they came back, and they said, you know, it's really strange. We saw all these European-looking coffee shops that were adorable, but nobody's open. 8 o'clock, 8:30 in the morning, nobody's open. And she said, oh, no, we're home drinking our mate, which is a tea made from the leaves of the yerba tree. She said, we don't go out for coffee in the morning. We have mate at home. And she said, mate is the way we ingest caffeine. But she said, coffee is a social event. You don't see anybody walking down the street carrying a cup of coffee. She said, to us, that seems super, super strange. You sit among your friends and mm-hmm. you have coffee together.
And you socialize.
Mm-hmm. And it's later in the morning or when?
Afternoonish.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting. And how is the coffee? Is it really...
Robust.
Robust.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good.
And they grow coffee in Argentina?
I'm not even really... They don't. That's more toward north toward the equator.
Yeah, central.
Yeah.
Central America.
Yep.
Well, you're listening to my visit with Joseph Myers and Patty Fulton, who come from... Seneca right now. They have a bed and breakfast there called Laternia, and Joseph has been offering classes in cooking for years now in the Vernon County area, all around the Mississippi Coulee region, whatever you want to call it, Driftless. And Joseph and Patty are wonderful hosts and hostesses for parties and for classes, and I've gotten the joy of participating in those. So we are talking first to just about their travels to Central and South America just in the last couple of months. I'm getting away from Wisconsin winter, but we're going to go on and talk about looking forward to spring and summer and some of the new ideas that Joseph and Patty
entertaining
have. Entertaining.
And hospitality.
And hospitality, which is... I mean, that's what really they add to just food. They're just not just about cooking. So you're listening to WDRT 91.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at WDRT. You could be listening now on the internet, or you can go back to our website, go to Who's in the Kitchen, and look at the archives. This show will be archived and appear early next week. We always have our show at noon on Saturdays. Last Saturday of the month is my farming show with Joseph Childs called Digging Deep. So thanks for tuning in, and we're just going to go on with some of the ideas we have for entertainment.
Let's talk about hospitality.
Okay.
So, boys and girls, I'm going to have you all pull out your Bibles and turn to the Old Testament. We're going to look in Genesis, and there's a story of Abraham sitting outside his tent in the midday heat. And three travelers are coming through, and he says, come, stop, eat. Sarah will bake bread. He washes their feet. They prepare a calf. He feeds them. In the Near East, travelers needed to count on the hospitality of strangers, because I don't care how much silver you carry in your little purse, there were no inns, there were no places to stop, and you counted on people for their hospitality. These were the three angels that let Abraham and Sarah know that in their advanced age they were going to have a son. The story of Abraham and Sarah and their hospitality infiltrated down through the three Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, and that's the hospitality aspect. You couldn't travel in the Near East without the hospitality mm-hmm. of others. So and it's still a principle of Islam. It's still a principle of Christianity. The Benedictine monks work with one culture, one area. They stay in one spot, and they build in their monasteries sleeping rooms for travelers. That's historically that's been their hospitality. So when one of the ways that we show love for our friends and make new friends is to feed them. There are no strangers to Patty. Those people that have interacted with her will be at Johnson's one stop, and I'll look around. Okay, we're ready to go, and Patty is down an aisle in the hardware section having a animated conversation with someone. I have no idea who they are. And I'm like, Patty, we got to go. And then this person gives Patty a great big hug. And I think, well, we'll be cooking dinner for somebody that I don't
And Philothea, it's true. Yeah. We will.
Yes, Patty is full of kisses. So I mean, you can't escape it.
We feed people. We like to show what is new and fresh and what we've learned. And it's more sharing than showing off.
No, it's not showing off. It's the way I was brought up is you show your love and your appreciation by feeding people. Yeah. It's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm. What's your tradition, Patty? Is it Polish?
I am totally Polish.
Yeah.
And brought up in a Polish family, Mom would have a whole bunch of people over. Or when my father was alive, he was a policeman. So whoever he was with on patrol, they would come over for lunch or dinner. So there were so many people in the house. And that was important.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely lovely.
So you're really comfortable. You and Joseph make a great pair, really.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we are a pair.
Yeah, no.
And there is no stranger. I would rather go up to a person who I've never met before and say, hi, I'm Patty. And you know that, Philothea, because we did that the first time we met.
I know.
And it makes me feel good.
Oh, it's wonderful. So it's wonderful to feel loved.
When we entertain, we don't have formal dinner parties. Coming from the Chicago area, that was more of the norm. But it was more social climbing and hardcore business, and that isn't done here. People here open their homes around the holidays, and it's mostly family, but we're starting to see more people entertain, and we'll use that term with a lowercase e because we don't want to stress people out when we have our events. We don't want to be stressed, so we try and make it as straightforward, and our concern is for the comfort of our guests.
Yes. And the ease of what we're doing. If we're going to have a party, and you've been to a couple, Philothea, we make sure that as the host and hostess, we don't have to be chained to the dishwasher, the stove, the cleanup. I did that the first year, and I missed out on all these wonderful people that we live with. You really do.
Uh-huh.
So now we've decided we're going to, and it's not, it's basically just needed. If you want to enjoy yourself at your own party, you can't be stuck, and that's the only way to explain it, cleaning up. Yes, we do clean up, but it's always nice to have someone help.
I notice you always have a teenager or somebody who's just taking care of the dirty dishes.
Some neighborhood kid who could use $100 and they pick up glasses and do dishes, and they check the bathroom and all the stuff that we don't need to do.
Paper towels and stuff.
And when we start our events, we're kind of aware of guest comfort, that there's a place for them to put their coats, and there's a place for them. We learned in this culture coming from Chicago, people walk in your house and they take off their shoes.
But when they're muddy boots.
When you have 20 people and you've got 40 shoes, you need to not only have a spot for shoes, but have a spot for them to sit and put their shoes back on. So it starts at the door.
Mm-hmm.
Patty made a sign for the front door that says shoes off or on. We don't care.
We really don't.
We don't care. We're going to mop the floors after you're gone anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got a hole in your sock and you're embarrassed about taking it, don't take off your shoes. We don't care.
Well, honestly, I mean, I do not have sidewalks. I have gravel.
Sure.
And, you know, by the time you've gotten into the house, you've got mud on your shoes. And a lot of people don't. If you don't live in the city, you don't have sidewalks. And so you bring in real dirt.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. We live at the end of a gravel road. And
people are used to doing that, I think.
We're concerned about our guests. We want them to have a good time when they come in. We let people know, here is where the beer and wine and soda are. We make a concerted effort to get that bar out of the kitchen.
Okay.
Get it completely away, including the source of the ice. Get that away from the kitchen. There's an ice bucket way over on the counter over there. We let people know, here's where the beer and wine are. If one needs opening, here's a corkscrew for the next bottle of wine. After that, you are on your own. We don't continue to.
Mm-hmm. Right. We'd like to think that everyone who comes over, they are visiting family and friends, and it's their house. Mm-hmm. We don't want them to feel uncomfortable at all.
But I have noticed you kind of clear out sort of bottlenecks. I mean, you're basically entertaining. You've got a living room and kitchen that are adjoining, and dining room. It's all one big open space.
Yep.
And with
then
a
the
bar
basement.
And the, yeah, and then the basement. And you have this sort of big bar countertop right in the kitchen where you can serve food.
Sure.
I mean, it's kind of the main things.
Sure.
And you have a dining room table where you might have snacks. I know you have kind of a coffee table where there's some more snacks. And then down the basement, you have a lot of finger food. A lot of finger food.
We do.
Because most of the parties are not sit down.
Correct.
You're milling around, you're visiting, you're in and out. You might be outside if it's, you know, a nice warm day.
And then in the basement, usually when the weather's been bad, we do have a band or several performers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Philothea, it's absolutely wonderful. I think you even know that.
We have fun.
We have lots of fun. You've had some really great entertainers. I mean, this is not ho-hum.
No,
these are just
it's
some
not.
Pretty good, outstanding
But there,
music.
There are entertaining, there are party ideas that that people might be aware of that are fun and cost-effective, things that we have stolen from other hostesses around, over the years.
It's true. It's true.
We have a friend who has a collection of the martini up glasses, the little, for those of you on the listening
on
the to
stems.
The radio, my hands are moving, stemmed, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So she had a supply of those at the end of the table with a chafing dish of mashed potatoes. And then there were all these little dishes of melted butter, of gravy, of caramelized onions, of minced chives from her garden,
bacon
blue
bits.
Cheese, cheddar cheese, bacon bits. People were making mashed potato martinis that they could carry around.
I think that's
and,
so cute.
And the men who came to the party, because it was in a stuffy little house, they were like, you mean I can put anything I want on my mashed potatoes and I can walk around and eat it? That mashed potato bar was just a
that
smash.
That is so cute.
It's fun.
I love the way you combine kind of almost kind of playing with your food with eating it.
Sure.
I mean, it's not just having a bowl of mashed potatoes, but like being involved in it.
It's an experience.
Yes. And one time I was there and we were, you know, you had the dough for the tortillas, and you have a place where people could just go roll their own tortillas.
Gosh, I'm so glad
again.
You were thrilled by that, because Patty and I look at each other like, we did not plan that.
We try and
make things as seamless as possible, and we got involved in a couple of things, and I'm like, we have got to get these tortillas going. And I turn around, and you're there with John Pedretti from Vernon Vineyards, and you're, okay, we can figure this out. So you guys, and immediately are like, this dough is too wet. Okay, no big deal. Nobody caught fire. Just add more masa, and we'll get all these together. And now we've got guests literally involved, and it was so much fun. John had just a ball doing it.
Nothing
it was
like
wonderful.
Getting people to mingle, right?
Sure.
And I was so happy that I had you guys to talk to and to help. And then we were like so amazed. Okay, to have a tortilla pop up in the middle of cooking is fantastic.
That's Patty's challenge when she's making tortillas. If I can get the puff is the stuff, that's her. That's
it's
her.
True. It's so true. It was so good.
But hostesses can count on their guests to do something. And when you invite people, you know there are folks who will say, what can I do to help? And that's the last thing you want them to do is to help. And there are other people who say, what can I do to help? You can start on those tortillas. You can assign your guests something.
Yes. What other things can you get your guests to do if they ask?
You know, absolute last minute things. Grate some cheese over this. Can you slice those avocados for me? Can you, you know, just
help set up an area for food? Anything like that is great.
You're not going to have them break down a pork roast so that you can grind sausage.
That's your job, Joseph.
But at the very last minute, sure, can you put these out? I've put these canapés on a plate. Can you just go past these? Can you, you know, just you can assign things
that
to your guests.
That is lovely. I did that once at a party. Someone walking around with a tray of canapés. That just made the party seem so elegant. But it was just, I mean, you could have just had them on a table.
And we have killed two birds with one stone. When we have a new neighbor move in, we assigned her the task, can you just pass these and introduce yourself? So she literally has to walk up to somebody and say, hi, I'm Tiffany. I moved in next door. So she had a way of introducing mm-hmm. herself that was more natural than standing and being mm-hmm. a wallflower and waiting for somebody to introduce them.
Right. Well, we were talking about just kind of learning the art of introducing yourself and introducing. I mean, Patty's really good about that. You know?
Sure.
She says, I just say, hi, I'm Patty. I'm from here or whatever. But when you come into a party, what can you do to kind of get to know other people and help them mingle?
If it's your house and you've invited everyone, you know who is new to the group. Mm-hmm. You may not know if you invite people to, if you're doing a fundraiser or some other non-family type deal, you may not be sure that, I don't know if he knows her. So have you met my friend Philothea? And if it's your friend from 54 years, and I'm not embarrassed that, oh, we've been friends for a whole long time. And there are other people that are like, I've always wanted to meet her. So as a hostess, you can introduce your long-term friends to new people. You can count on, Philothea, I want you to meet my friend Patty, and I'm going to count on Patty to say, this is my husband, Joseph. Have you met Philothea? And let that domino through the room.
And it works really well.
Mm-hmm. I went to a workshop one time where they just had everybody interview the person next to them.
Interesting.
And they gave you like 2 minutes, and then they asked you to introduce that person from what
who you interviewed. Cool.
Wow.
And that's really a lovely thing. I don't know how you can do it actually at a party, but very informally. But, you know, pass it on to the next person. I met this person. They do this. They came from here. They love to do this kind of thing.
Nice.
And pass it around. Because sometimes, especially in neighborhoods where people think they all know each other, they might not think that some people do need to be introduced into the group.
Sure.
Right. Well, a lot of the times after we meet people or get introduced, then we introduce them to someone else, and then we find out that they know another person who's connected. Mm-hmm. So this is another connection that makes everyone, and I do mean everyone, feel so comfortable to be in the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
And that's what we really want. We want people to enjoy themselves.
When you have guests get their hands going on something, that's a nice way for them to know each other, to learn about each other. We're doing a hand-rolled pasta event where we're literally rolling out orecchiette and maleratus, and it takes several hands to get going in that. You could do it if you were making tamales or some other kind of hands-on thing where you're bringing people in very close proximity around a table. And that's one way to get people together.
Whether they know each other or not.
Yep, mm-hmm. And it's fun.
Right. So what do you now, some of this is actually classes, and you've offered classes, people sign up,
sure.
They pay money
yep.
to take the
yep.
class, and it's a whole morning or a whole day. Tell us a little bit what you've done with that, and then you have the informal thing where you're just having a party.
Sure.
And also including your guests and preparing.
We're doing a street taco class. Street tacos are two or three bite little taco with legitimate refried beans.
Chorizo?
And making your own chorizo. So that class goes from 3 to 6, and everyone sits down and eats together what we've made. We mm-hmm. do 4 or 5 different pasta classes. Patty has a class where she teaches how to make 3 different kinds of shortbread cookies. We do a dessert class where Patty makes sorghum bread pudding, which is absolutely phenomenal.
Oh, my goodness.
So several pasta classes. We've done entree salad classes. We have Sunday I'm doing a breakfast class where we're doing Dutch babies and shakshuka, which is that Moroccan eggs poached in a spicy tomato sauce.
You do a risotto class?
Oh, that big fun. A lot of stirring. A lot of stirring, but that's okay. That's the reason.
Several
for
type
it.
Of breakfast classes.
Yeah.
And that's good.
We do a cocktail.
Oh, and the soup classes.
Soup class is fun. And we do a cocktail and hors d'oeuvre class.
Yeah, that's fun.
Oh, yeah. I just want to do a little station ID again. WDRT 91.9 FM. Streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org. And I'm talking with Joseph Meyer and Patty Fulton from the Seneca area. And we're talking about entertaining and especially moving toward the warmer months of the year, the kind of foods that are available fresh, and how to, you know, incorporate your guests and make them feel at home and getting to know the other people who've been invited to the party. So we have a few more minutes to just get more ideas from Patty and Joseph. I just think they're such great hosts and hostesses. And if you're worried about having guests over, especially people who don't know each other, I think they have a lot of good ideas of how to make it not overwhelming, not something that you're worried about, and that even not having everything all completely prepared, but maybe the last step is ready for your guests to finish up.
You do not have to make everything. We don't make everything.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Clemens at Noble Rind, we have a beautiful piece of granite that we clean off and say, here, Sarah, can you build a charcuterie board on here for us? We don't have the time.
Nice.
Although I bake bread, I'm super happy asking Samantha Witte over here on Jefferson. Here is what I need for our party. I don't need to be baking bread for a party.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, you don't have to make everything. When you have people ask you, when you invite them to a party, what can I bring? There are some people that I'm like, oh, no, just bring yourself. And there are others like, could you bring that rhubarb thing that you made? You can assign your guests something.
Mm-hmm. Or if we don't have enough utensils, can you bring a couple ladles over?
We had a soup party. I'm like, oh, I have three soups and I only have one ladle. So you better bring a ladle.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's talk about being a good guest at a party.
Okay.
There are some things that will make you a better guest. When you are invited to a party, some of the things that you should not bring, counterintuitive, please don't bring wine to a party because you put the hostess on a spot to think, am I supposed to serve this wine that they brought?
Is this a gift?
What if their wine is better than mine? Am I supposed to serve it? Are they casting aspersions on the wine that I serve? Do I just put it away?
I never thought about that.
Are they
going to
get mad at me?
Joke.
Are they going to get mad at me for not serving their wine? It puts the hostess in a spot at a time when she's kind of stressed. So don't bring wine to a party. Don't bring flowers to a party. Because when you're in the middle of piecing everything together, you got to, I got to go find a vase, make sure that it's clean, get all the dust and stuff off of it. I arrange these flowers, and then do I put them on my table? Do I put them on? Am I going to offend her if I don't put this out?
Oh, interesting.
So
I didn't think about that.
Bringing flowers to a party or wine to a party.
Unless you're asked.
Unless you're asked. Don't bring food to a party unless you're asked. Here are things that you can bring, and I learned this from Ina Garten, and in my advanced age, I'm starting to lust after Ina Garten just a little bit more because she's just a doll.
Right. What's her moniker? Ina Garten is
Barefoot Contessa.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. She said, "Show up with a little basket or a covered plate of a half a dozen muffins and some ground coffee. I know you're going to be swamped tonight. Here, I've made breakfast for you tomorrow."
That's.
I've had people come to my house with a little jar of cilantro salt. Put it in my hand and say, these really go good on vegetables. Do that next week when you don't have a house full.
And you know what? It's right. The cilantro salt was good.
It was good.
I forgot I did that.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Yes, you did.
So when you are a guest, if you legitimately have willing hands, is there anything I can do? And if you get assigned something, okay, you have to take ownership of it. The pressing out tortillas was just seamless, and it was a super helpful and super fun for everybody concerned.
Mm-hmm. So because everybody was engaged, yep. And that made a difference.
Be mm-hmm. a good guest. When you are a host of a party and you're issuing invitations, whether they're formal or email or just call people up or see people over at Johnson's One Stop and you invite them over, let them know start and stop time. Let them know where to park. We talked about that before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That if they come over in ATVs, this is ATV parking. don't park on my neighbor's septic field.
Please.
Lawn.
We have, and there are other people that are like, there's the side pasture. We can fit 40 cars in there. Go ahead and park in there. Let people know if it's going to be an indoor or outdoor party. Patty's no longer in the stiletto heel wearing days, but you don't want to be invited to a lovely little afternoon reception and find out that it's outside on the grass.
And the grass is soft.
So, you know, so let people know where it's going to be.
And let's talk about, do people show up after they said they're coming?
Oh, boy.
We meet RSVP does mean something.
It does. The first couple of times we entertained, we had a whole lot of people walk in to our house without RSVPing. And one of our lovely neighbors, just loved this man to death, who said, you issued an invitation. I figured you wanted me to come. And I'm thinking, I would like to know if you were coming, because we had a bunch of people walk in we were not expecting. Okay, we roll with it. As Patty says, as long as I have a faucet, we're not going to run out of soup if more people come in. This last event, we had a whole bunch of people RSVP, yes, which was pleasant. And we had food and beverage for a whole lot of people, and some people just didn't show up without a phone call, and would see them a week or so later, oh, yeah, we got sick. Okay, did your cell phone get sick? I mean, just send us a note, there's 100 different right. ways to communicate. And these are your friends. These are people that you count on, and they count on you. So if you're invited to a party and it says RSVP, make a decision and follow through on it.
Say, yeah, I'll be there. And then be there.
And then be there.
Yes, I was at one of your parties. We had really, I think, two and a half gallon pots of soup, and it was almost all of it was there at the end of the party. And I was just shocked. I was really shocked. I said, can I take some home?
Yeah.
Next time I'm bringing, a jar for carryouts.
You would not be the first person to show up at our house with Tupperware.
Yeah, we've already got it.
But that is, you do kind of want to have a general idea of how many
sure.
people are coming. Is
sure.
it 10 or is it 50?
Yep.
It makes a difference.
Yeah, just so we have enough food, because
I
that's what it is.
I know, feel bad if
yeah,
you
I really do.
Food. Yeah.
We had somebody swing by yesterday with a grocery bag of empty Tupperware containers from former parties.
Is that a sweet idea?
She's like, could you fill these up?
Wait, you'll definitely get more.
I've been doing that for church, just saving my containers and sure. taking church, because a lot of times there's food to take
sure.
home afterwards, and there isn't anything stored there at church.
You want a couple of fun recipes?
Yes.
We learned to make savory s'mores.
Okay, I'm for that.
Didn't know there was a thing.
Oh.
The little red wax baby bells.
Uh-huh.
You take those, take the wax off of them. Cut them in half horizontally through the equator. Put them on a stick. You have substantial crackers, like what are the ones?
Triscuits.
That have some heft and some sturdiness to them. Put a slice of Driftless Provision salami on there. And by the way, they now sell it pre-sliced, so it's way easier. So you've got a cracker. You have a slice of salami. You put your slice of baby bell on a stick, and you toast it over the fire until it starts to melt, and you're making savory s'mores. It's just melty baby bell cheese and salami on a cracker. Oh, when you're standing outside, big fun.
Just do that over the grill
yeah.
or over an open fire.
Yeah,
campfire.
Exactly. Sweet, yeah.
We also learned to make, you're familiar with the concept of monkey bread, where you pull it all apart and it's all sweet?
I'm not familiar with it.
It's a sweet dough rolled into balls and put into a bundt pan and baked, and you turn it out, and then you pull it apart as little bite size. Go to the co-op, buy two bags of pizza dough. Bring them home, pull them apart till you have almost a golf ball-sized chunk of dough. With your thumbs, push in a little piece of mozzarella and a piece of pepperoni. Seal it all up. Layer them into a bundt pan that's been buttered or coated with olive oil. Each layer, add a sprinkle of oregano. And until you build them all up, and you'll get it 4 or 5 inches, 2 or 3 layers high. Let it sit on the counter for 10, 15 minutes so it kind of reproofs. Then bake it into a super hot oven, 450 degrees, 20 minutes. Turn the bundt pan out onto a plate, and the hole in the center, you can put a dish or a jar of pizza sauce. So people pull off that chunk of toasted pizza dough with the melty mozzarella and pepperoni and dip it into the pizza sauce. Kids love that.
Oh, I bet.
Pizza monkey bread. Anything kids can do with their hands, they absolutely love it.
By the way, Philothea, adults love it too, I'm telling you.
So that's kind of fun. When we do a bar, beer, wine, soda, non-alcoholic beer, and the non-alcoholic beer caliber has gotten really, really good. There's some really good ones out there.
There's some non-alcoholic wine that's not bad either.
Haven't found one. So if you have a recommendation, let me know.
Okay. Also, I was going to ask you about non-alcoholic beverages. What do you do for that? You know, for people who don't want to be drinking.
We always have some kind of canned beverages. Where we live, it's very hard to recycle glass, so we're canned everything. But we do have sodas and sparkling waters. We make non-alcoholic mimosas.
That's fun. How do you do that?
We went to a brunch in little bitty Marion, Iowa, where I went to high school, and they had a flight of mimosas. And Patty loved the...
I love the grapefruit.
Yeah, that was good. So
what goes into a mimosa? It's a citrus fruit? It's usually orange, isn't it?
It's usually orange juice and either Prosecco or champagne. There is a sparkling water called Topo Chico. Comes in a glass bottle. You can get it at Walmart or Quick Trip has it. But it's got absolute pinpoints, real biting carbonation to it. It's brighter than club soda. There is a lemonade. It's an organic lemonade that they sell at Quick Trip, and the name escapes me.
Patty's
looking at me like you were supposed to remember this.
Yeah, you were supposed to bring it to the show.
But Topo Chico or a sparkling, a club soda and that lemonade or cranberry juice or apple juice, apple juice that they do at the Hermitage in Soldiers Grove. That and sparkling water is a non-alcoholic mimosa, and it's lovely.
Oh, and you were saying grapefruit. How do you do the grapefruit?
It's grapefruit juice. It's usually ruby red because it's a little sweeter. And with the Topo Chico or the Prosecco.
Yep.
And it's so good. That's the best mimosa I actually like.
Non-alcoholic cocktails have come a long way, and they're getting better. Typically, they have always been oversweetened for my taste. In September, we're hosting, and I don't have a date yet, a sauna and sobriety event. There is a lovely lady. I met her when listened to her TED Talk about people who don't consume alcohol and how they're made to feel in public, at bars, at events, at our house parties. And her best friend is a big sauna enthusiast, and you're a sauna enthusiast, so are we. And there's an event in Minnesota that we're going to in Minneapolis where communal sauna is a big thing. And then they are featuring non-alcoholic cocktails, pre-mixed pour and serve non-alcoholic cocktails, premium non-alcoholic beers. So we're learning more about that.
And I can say honestly, the non-alcoholic beers are pretty good.
They're better.
Good. That's great. Yeah.
So when we do have the bar, beer, wine, and soda, often we'll have a pitcher of a cocktail, whether it's margaritas or a pitcher of daiquiris or a pitcher of mimosas. Mm-hmm. I went to an absolute disaster of a choir party where the choir director had a punch bowl of Manhattans. That's just too much, too much. But we do a tinto, which is a Spanish. Don't call it a sangria because it's really not. And in a traveling pitcher, if you dice up a lemon and an orange, and you're adding some sweet vermouth, which is unusual but very good. One way to use up your sweet vermouth. And then go out to the deck to hear music at Vernon Vineyards and order a bottle of their Juliet wine, which is sweetened a little bit with cranberry juice, but it's not overly sweet. Mm-hmm. Pour that into a pitcher with a half a bottle of Sundrop soda or some kind of lemon-flavored soda. It's light, summery. It doesn't kill the taste of the wine, so you're getting the best of everything. And I've served it to the Pitrettis, and they're like, well, this is pretty darn good. No.
How do you avoid using plastic glasses? Have you found a solution to that?
We invested in glasses.
Glass.
And knowing that we have somebody who's going to wash them for us has been a blessing. So the drinking vessel is not too terribly hard to overcome.
Think of rewashing. Right.
Plastic plates and plastic silverware, we're still kind of slaves to that. We're working on that.
Right. But try to get rid of that plastic silverware. Well, and you can always ask your guests to bring you a bag of mismatched silverware.
Interesting.
You know, that's,
and
what was I going to say? Oh, I get my glassware at Goodwill, and fantastic,
we took
the old-fashioned cocktail glasses.
And we took recommendation from you, and that's where we went.
And we got the affogato glasses, the little espresso glasses. Mm-hmm. We got a whole bunch of that from them, which was really great because they're really beautiful.
Yeah, I know. Well, a lot of people say, well, I don't have the full set anymore, so I'll just give these away, you know. So we are just about out of time. I've been talking with Joseph Myers and Patty Fulton from Seneca area, who have Latarnia as their place of entertainment, and it's a bed and breakfast where they have a sauna, and they're near the Mississippi River on a big, big hillside that looks out over that beautiful valley. And they love entertaining, using food for entertaining and education and cultural experience and getting to know people. So great to have you on the show. Thank you.
It was awesome. Thank you for having us
again. Thank you, Phyllis, so much.
Thank you to my listeners for tuning in to Who's in the Kitchen. We're on at noon every Saturday. The last Saturday of the month is Digging Deep. So thank you again, and we'll see you next week.